The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. This week, we're going to be talking about potential tax planning threats and opportunities that are in the current Build Back Better Act, which is in its fairly early stages. We don't have the final version of it yet. We don't know what will ultimately be passed, but there's enough noises in there for us to start paying attention to what might be coming down the pike, if you will. Before we get into that, I do want to do a quick, public service announcement. I don't know what else you'd call it, but the last Q&A show that released half a week ago or so had some audio difficulties in it. Some of you may have run into that if you have your podcast software set to automatically download our podcasts as they come out. And just wanted to let people know that the solution to that is to re-download it. What happens occasionally, this has happened a couple of times in the years we've been doing this, something strange will happen to the audio file. In this case, Jim and I were out of sync on the audio track. And we will be advised of it by a podcast listener, and we'll fix it and re-upload it. But the version you've downloaded on your personal device is still there, so it won't seem fixed unless you delete it and re-download it. So in the future, just a heads up for anybody who runs into any kind of anomalies, the first thing I would recommend is you delete it and re-download it from wherever you're getting your podcasts. If that doesn't resolve it, then let us know. Somebody's probably already reached out. People are pretty... I was surprised on Saturday morning when it was released how quickly people let us know that there was an issue, but... we've put a notice up on the podcast text, but if that happens in the future, just re-download it and you should be totally fine. We appreciate those who let us know there was an issue. So, end of announcement. Jim, thanks for joining me today. We're going to talk about potential tax planning threats and opportunities in the Build Back Better. We got to come up with are we calling it the Triple B Act?
The BBB.
Can't call it the... I don't know. BBB is Better Business Bureau, usually.
Yeah, I think BBB's been trademarked. We can't use that.
Yeah.
So. Well, the governor, I'm not a big fan of a lot of the stuff they're trying to pass with this, and I'm certainly not a big fan of the acronym, BBBA. Who came up with that?
Yeah, they clearly didn't send that through the Department of Acronyms.
No, it's just a horrendous one.
You can't, the USMCA, the U.S.-Mexico... something agreement, whatever that, years ago, how we had this beautiful acronym NAFTA, and they came up with USMCA. Oh, it was the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA. That was a terrible acronym. I think they took the day off on the acronym office, but this one's terrible too.
Even BABA would have been better, Build All Back Again or something. I don't know. Just... The Build Back Better Act, yeah. The BBBA. So anyways, is coming through. Like it or not, they're going to shove it down our throats like they always do. Right towards the end of the season, everybody's getting happy about the holidays, and they're going to be bending you over and telling you to grab your ankles. And we don't know what, though, is going to be in it. Right now, this is just the language of the act, a summary of what's in there.
Yeah, there needs to be somebody who passes a rule that there can be no major tax changes in the last 3 months of the year.
But that's when they always do
it. I know, even the dead of the night of December.
Exactly. Even when they passed the tax cuts under the last administration, the old Trumpster there, they did it right towards the end of the year. And that's the one that got rid of the ability to do Roth recharacterizations. And they didn't even give you any time to work that into to your planning. They just got rid of it.
Yeah.
This is that and a whole bunch more of what they're trying to jam through. The problem is, Chris, we don't know what's going to make the final cut.
Right.
There is not one Republican in support of this. Even the left-leaning Republicans right now haven't even come out in support of this or any provision in it. So granted, there's only slim majorities in the House and even a slimmer one in the Senate. It would take every single Democrat going along with this, and it is an election year next year, so there's going to be a lot of sausage making going on, folks. So the first thing, Chris, and I want you to understand, this is not the law yet. It's giving us an idea, though, of what they're thinking. And even if some of the provisions don't pass now, what I want to do, I'm not going to analyze the whole law. The reason I refuse to do that, I might waste two, three, four days doing this, shows doing this, rather. And then half of it's in, Chris, and half of it isn't even in it. We waste all our time talking about it.
Right.
We're going to highlight some of the important things that we feel will most likely be passed, but it's not saying they will be, but also the ones that are going to impact our listeners most. And most of our listeners, from feedback we receive, this isn't a deep scientific study, it's more anecdotal than anything, from people that we work with, from people who have contacted us, from people who have emailed us questions, we kind of have a good picture of you. You're Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers with a little smidgen of Schwabians, Fidelians, and T. Rowe Priceians thrown in there. You kind of manage your assets on your own, but a few of you do hire advisors to help you with managing your assets, but you're realizing you want more exposure to true planning and what's it going to be to retire. And you know distributing your assets is far more difficult than accumulating your assets. And most of you have amassed probably around $2 to $7 or $8 million in assets. By definition, you are wealthy, but you don't feel wealthy, and you shouldn't, because compared to the truly wealthy, remember, I attended a class several years ago, and I did sign up for an online seminar by one of the instructors in that class. I'll let you know how it is, Chris. I haven't heard it yet, folks. But remember, I sat in on a class for people with $40 million or more in assets?
Mm-hmm.
And I came out of it, and I told you when I came back from that seminar, well, not the seminar, but the whole conference, that rich people pay no taxes because they hire people like this guy.
Yeah.
And the strategies he had was just, it was way above my head. There was some I followed, upstream gifting, a nice strategy that I know about, he spoke about. But for the most part, he was getting into very deep strategies. Anyways, he's going to be doing a seminar on his take of this. But what I'm getting at, folks, ostensibly, that's who they're going after. Those were called ultra-high net worth, according to this this teacher, if you will. But he said people with $40 million or more of assets were ultra-high net worth. I kind of disagree with that, folks, because there's people out there with hundreds of millions and even more people with billions. And I think a lot of what they're going after is trying to drag those people in, the billionaires, the 100 millionaires, the 50 millionaire people. And they're trying to pawn this, Chris, as well. It's not going to affect the people with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million. But if you look at a lot of these provisions – and that's the reason I'm doing the show today. There's a lot, Chris, that's going to impact our listeners mm-hmm. and our clients, without a doubt. They're passing it under the going after the evil rich, but the net has been cast so low or so deep, I don't know what the saying is, it's dragging up a lot of, in my opinion, innocent fish with it. Does that kind of make sense?
I think so.
Okay.
Only because I know what you mean.
Oh, okay.
I think most people followed.
I hope they do, because yeah, I sometimes yeah. don't no, know what was, I mean.
Good so far.
Yeah. All right, good. So we're going to start going through this. And again, I'm not going to get through this whole act in one show. We're probably going to do a couple of EDU shows on this. And we'll just kind of share with you our thoughts of some of the provisions that are throwing up a red flag to us. There's a couple. Let me just read a few of these that I think will end up becoming an issue for some of our listeners. Of course, they're going to be raising the income taxes up to 39.6. We'll dive into that in a second. So that is going to impact some of our listeners, the way they are going to be raising that. And if you see how they're raising it, they're actually really squeezing those last few brackets. And you'll see, mm-hmm. beginning January 1st, people who might have been in the 35 bracket, Chris, mm-hmm. all of a sudden going to find themselves in the 39.6 bracket. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I think will pass, and it's one thing that I feel will impact many, many of our listeners.
Particularly those who did what they were told to do over many years and saved and saved and saved in in tax deferred accounts, a traditional 401k, IRA, et cetera, and have, maybe enjoyed the growth opportunities that have been available to a lot of people in those accounts over the past 10, 12 years. And their RMDs now are facing them in large quantities, particularly those who have these accounts plus pension or plus good-sized Social Security between two people in a couple. They've got that ticking tax time bomb kind of a situation where RMDs kick in, and they get thrust up into a tax bracket that they never actually may have even been in while both were working. That's the thing that blows people away, is they find that sometimes in retirement they end up in a higher tax bracket. They were always told when they were younger they'd be in a lower tax bracket when they retired, so they should be deferring all this income. And now more and more are going to get sucked into maybe a higher bracket. That's what's so worrisome, and that's why you need to be doing some of these projections and make sure you really want to be deferring as long as you were planning.
And another thing they're doing is they're going to be raising the top capital gains tax rate. We're going to get into this a little bit today, too. Again, these are the ones that we think are going to impact people. One of the things is it's pretty much going to begin at around what our current 35% tax bracket is. And it's going to increase from 20 to 25%. They're not adding a third. They're just changing the 20 to a 25%. So it'll be 15 and 25. Then you add on the 3.8 NIT surcharge. You can start to get into 28.3. But that's going to pick up around today's 35% tax bracket, where you're going to be paying substantially higher cap gains and be pushed to the 39.6 bracket. So there could be a pretty big tax increase for people earning around $400,000 or $500,000 as a couple.
Yeah, and the other thing to remember is this is going to be talked about in the media as 5% more. 5% this, 5% that. Well, here on this show, we're going to talk about it the way math really works, which is 25% as a rate is 25% bigger than 20 as a rate, right? Your tax bill, all else being equal, goes up by 25% compared to what it was under the 20% rule in this particular case. So don't fall victim, if you will, to the terminology that gets a little sloppy in the mainstream media areas. And this is even this is a pet peeve of mine. That's why I'm bringing it up. We've talked about it on the show before, how people talk about, 5% versus 4% in something that's not that big a deal. No, that's 25% bigger. The number 5 is 25% bigger than the number 4. In this case, it's the same kind of math. The number 25, a 25% cap gains rate, is 25% bigger than the number 20. So it's a significant difference. Your taxes aren't going up by 5%. Your taxes are going up by 25%.
Exactly. And again, that's not going to impact everyone here, but a lot of listeners it will. So you got to pay attention. And oftentimes they pass these and slowly begin to capture more and more people, either by not indexing them for inflation or just later trying to change the bracket size. It's no different than Reagan when he started taxing Social Security. They passed it by saying only 1% of retirees were going to have to pay taxes on their Social Security. Mm-hmm. That was in 83. Today, over 50% of Social Security recipients pay taxes on their Social Security, because it was designed to do that. So this is going to be an issue. And another one, Chris, that I bet you a lot of people think, oh, this isn't going to impact me. It's not going to impact me at all. How about the 3% surtax for ultra-high income taxpayers? That's where they're going to take the 39.6 bracket, which is becoming the new highest bracket, and adding 3 percentage points. So instead of 39.6, it'll be 39, 40, 41, 42. 2.6 listeners. And it only applies to people with $5 million or more of taxable income. Okay, Chris, that sounds harmless enough, does it not?
Well, not for those in that category, but...
No, harmless enough, though, for all our listeners to this podcast. So, yeah. So nobody listening to this podcast, y'all need to not worry about that. I'm going to explain to you why everyone listening to this podcast might be impacted by that tax. And I will explain to you what they built into that law that's not getting a lot of attention. And far more of you listening to this may be subject to that tax than you ever thought possible. But the ones that are getting all the attention, hopefully by our listeners, they probably have heard by now, is the prohibition on converting after-tax dollars contained in retirement accounts to Roth IRAs. Essentially, the death of the backdoor Roth contribution strategy. Mm-hmm. And the mega backdoor Roth. We've been trying to get that poor gentleman, not poor gentleman, he listens to us all the time, on the show who wanted to talk about the mega strategy. It took so long.
We might have missed our opportunity.
The window closed. And it's all my fault, and I apologize wholeheartedly to him. But maybe we can find something else for him to come talk about. But it looks like they're going to try to jam that through and close that window on us.
Well, close that door, the back door.
I'll close the back door, but isn't it called close the window? Isn't that the saying, close the window?
Not when we're talking about a back door opportunity. We're going to close the door and lock it, is what they're about ready to do.
All right.
So you can't go in the back door. You either go in the front legit or you're not coming in, is basically the story.
And then I'm going to talk a bit about grantor trusts. And y'all are thinking, what the hell's a grantor trust? Why do we have to worry about it? It's pretty neat what grantor trusts can do, listeners. I would wager dollars to donuts. The vast majority of you never heard of them and never did any of the strategies. These are the strategies, Chris, that are being pushed, or not pushed, but were being offered by the gentleman who I'm going to be listening to one of his webcasts on, who is doing the planning for people with a net worth of $40 million or more. Mm-hmm. They were doing a lot with grantor trusts. When you see what they were doing, you'll know why the government is coming after this, because you're going to be like I was sitting there going, oh my God, no one pays taxes.
Yeah, well, this is another one of those where those ultra high net worth were using this, and the fact that they were using it and they're trying to shut this down, there's going to be some people that had a little more, I don't know, less offensive to those who are offended by these techniques, less offensive uses for these are going to get caught in here. And this is very much like when they killed the recharacterization of Roth IRA conversions. Remember how they slammed that door closed on us? And there were a lot of legitimate reasons why these were helpful for just run-of-the-mill, middle-income Americans. They complained that they needed to get rid of that because there were these high net worth, high wealth abusers of this technique. Well, that was a very small group. And the side effect was they slammed the door on a very legitimate and useful approach to dealing and handling your tax situation. And it wasn't an abusive thing that people were doing. I'm not going to say any more than that. I'm just comparing it to that. Hear them slamming the door on the typical uses for these grantor trusts for tax mitigation purposes is, I think, going to, you know, slam the fingers in the door of a bunch of people who weren't doing anything particularly nefarious with them. It was just a, you know, pretty straightforward approach to estate and tax planning.
Exactly, because what's going to get caught up in this, when you see how grantor trusts were being used by very, very, very wealthy people, all the way up to uber, uber, uber wealthy people, you're going to kind of sit there like I did years ago when I attended that conference, realizing rich people pay no taxes. They may have legal fees of a few $100,000 to these very smart attorneys and CPAs, but they don't give any of it to the government. I'd rather give $100,000 to a CPA to save $2 million going to Uncle Sam, and that's what they would do. The problem is, Chris, do you know what type of trusts are usually, not all the time, but usually set up as grantor trusts?
Well, the ones that we had started to talk about more recently after the CARES Act and the SECURE Act that have evolved and kind of changed things, and where we saw estate tax limits going or headed, the good old ILIT,
yep,
the Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust. ILIT, those, for those of you who haven't been familiar with those in the past, want to look up what the heck that thing is. Those are, I think, not an abusive use of this, you know, style of trust, but a lot of those are set up as grantor trusts. And this change is going to, again, have this side effect of going after the target, if they will, you know, these super wealthy people that were doing all these really super creative things, and shutting down people that have enough income and enough savings and wealth and concerns for estate planning and other issues that they are investigating the use of an ILIT. You don't have to be super wealthy to benefit from an ILIT, and you might have the rug pulled out from under you.
Exactly. It's not going to kill ILITs, but it's going to wound them greatly. Could they being these very high-priced CPAs and attorneys, come up with a different type of trust to do this? Most likely.
Yeah, they're pretty creative. So
I'm guessing yes. Right, they're already working on it, folks. And can you structure an ILIT as a non-grantor trust? I'm not an attorney. I believe you can, but it does have something to do with ownership and taxation and dragging into an estate, so I'm not sure. For those of you who think, oh, I'm lucky, I have an ILIT, I'm good to go, or I'm going to run out and get an ILIT now and just start this, they're on to that as well. Beginning in January, any premium payments you make to the insurance policy to keep it going will be prorated upon the life of that policy. So, and I don't quite know how that's going to work yet, Chris, but from what I've read, and I still need a lot more knowledge on this yet, folks, I don't quite know how they're going to do it. If, let's just say, half the life of that ILIT was under the old rules and half are under the new rules and we're funding the policy, because the ILIT pays premiums every year on the insurance. Mm-hmm. So it's 50-50 at death. Half the death benefit will be tax-free. Half the death benefit will be in the estate tax or subject to estate tax, if applicable. It may not be. So if you opened up one today trying to jam this through, nearly 100% of the premiums you pay before you die will be under the new law.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pulled in anyways.
Depending on how this whole thing gets deployed and all those final rules take place, none of that is finished, but that's the possible direction this is headed.
Exactly. So I don't know if I could even... we have two people that I know of that I'm going to have to reach out to and who were thinking, hey, in the future, if this happens, we'll create an ILIT and put this in. I don't know if they should run out and create one now, because I know it's not going to work now. And I'm just hoping if we have to create one later, some very smart attorneys will create these types of trusts not as a grantor trust. They're only going over after grantor trusts here. So I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm just kind of throwing these things out there that, mm-hmm. again, they're stirring up the pot and we've got to figure this all out. I just figure after this show, people are going to email us. Should I run out and do an ILIT now? I really think estate taxes are going to be an issue for me. Maybe not at the federal level, but at the state level where they happen to live. You can try it, but the way the law is written, they're going to prorate the premiums under the old rules and the new rules. You're kind of opening one with 3 months of old rules left. So to me, Chris, nearly all the premiums will be paid under the new rules, meaning most of that policy will be taxed anyways.
Yep.
So it's hard to say. I don't want people panicking, but these are things that they're doing to go after wealthier people are going to snag what we truly feel are upper middle class, hardworking yet successful people. People who applied themselves and amassed $2-8 million of assets, and the government wants to get their greedy little hands in there. Okay, so that's why I wanted to bring this up. There's a lot of provisions that seem like they're only going after the wealthy, especially the one that 3% surtax if you have income above $5 million. That sounds like no one listening to the show is going to be subject to that. I bet you quite a few people listening to the show might be subject to that once they hear what I mean. Okay, now we're not going to get through all of these today. Let's just start. I guess we should start right with the income tax rate and move forward from there. Chris, does that sound fair?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here we go again. What goes around comes around. At first blush, this sounds harmless enough. The Tax Cuts and Job Act, the tax cut passed under when the Republicans controlled the House and Senate and the White House, they didn't get anything done for those 4 years, but they got one thing done. They passed a tax cut. But they had always built into that, Chris, that the corporate tax cut was permanent, mm-hmm. and it would take an act of Congress to change, mm-hmm. which is part of this tax bill, by the way, folks. Yeah. They're going to raise the corporate taxes. So that wasn't very hard to do. Just get a new Congress in there and they'll change it.
Right.
But they had always built in that the individual tax mm-hmm. cuts would only last to technically December 31st of 2025.
Right.
January 1st of 2026, it went back to the old rules.
Right.
This bill is going to bring that top bracket back, just that one, quicker. So it sounds harmless enough. Oh, they're only bringing the 39.6 back. They're doing that now. They're not waiting until January 1st of 2026. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's what they're doing, but not quite that way because they are contracting, Chris, the brackets. Have you seen how that's working?
I heard about it. I haven't honestly spent a ton of time on the details because I've burned myself in the past by spending too much time on the initial versions of these bills. So I was waiting for it to get a little more finalized. So I haven't seen the compression. I've heard there is compression. I haven't seen the specifics.
Well, the way some in the media are reporting it, they're saying the current 37 bracket is being replaced with 39.6. So the new top bracket is 39.6. Instead of going 35, 37, it's going to go 35, 39.6. Sounds harmless enough. They're only going after those evil rich, right, Chris?
I'm sure that's not the case, the way you just phrased that. So right now, just so people know, the married filing joint for 2021, that income level where you're exposed to the 37 bracket is $628,300.
So that sounds harmless enough. They're going to simply replace the 37, get rid of it, and bring back the 39.6, which is where it was before the Republicans and Trump changed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The problem is they're also messing with the brackets. So as Chris just said, right now, if you're married, filing joint, you would have to have $628,301 mm-hmm. or more to be in the 37% bracket.
Right.
Now, the 37 is being changed to 39.6. Mm-hmm. So you would think, well, as long as a married couple, we don't earn more than $628,301, we're okay. It's not going to impact us. Mm-hmm. Well, it is. Because that bracket is dropping to just $450,000, $450,001 or more.
So just to put that in context, right now the 35 bracket, the 35%, one below the top bracket, for married filing joints is at $418,850. So you can see how much quicker you hit that top bracket after you pass the 35. 450 is just right around the corner from 418,850. So that is quite a compression from $210,000 essentially of extra income you had to recognize before you hit that next bracket under the old brackets. Well, old current brackets.
And this part of the bill, folks, I think has a 99% or better chance of passing, even without any Republican support raising the top marginal bracket. It irks me, though, when I never hear and a compression of the bracket. And they're not talking about that. But you don't have much wiggle room. Again, as Chris said, it took about $200,000 of wiggle room before you hit the next bracket. Now they're going to do it on what, about $40,000? Is that about it? I don't have a calculator here in front of me.
From 418 to 450?
No, it's not even 40,000.
$21,150.
Yeah, so that's a small bracket.
Sorry, 31,000. I was looking at it cross-eyed. Yeah, it's super small. 418 to 450, you're going to get there very quickly. $32,000 basically.
For single people, it'll be $400,000 where you will be hit with the 39.6 bracket.
So that one they don't punish as much. That one isn't as the 35 bracket for a single person is half right now the married filing joint. So they did away with this idea where the single and the married filing joint are, proportionally the same. Right, the married filing joint is double the size of the single currently. So 450 versus 400, they are giving single individual filers a little more room in there before they hit the top bracket. I'm not sure who suggested that, but I guess they're throwing a bone to the single folks in the world.
Now, under the old rules, or current rules, I say old rules, like this has passed. This hasn't passed.
Yeah, right.
Under the current rules, a single person at exactly, say, 400,000 exact or $400,001, they would be in the 35% bracket, folks, and they wouldn't hit the 37 bracket for another $123,600 or so, somewhere actually $599, but that's still $123,000 before they would hit the 37. Now, if they were at, they were at 400,000, $1 more, $1 more, and they will hit the 39.6 bracket. So that to me is a pretty big reduction, is it not? Mm-hmm. A pretty big contraction. If they had $400,000 today as a single person, they would be 35% bracket. And under the current rules, they could earn up to $123,599 more and be in just the 37 bracket. That's when the 37 bracket would kick in.
Yeah, but there's not a, right now the 35 is at 209. So they would have had almost $200,000 at 35 that you're kind of ignoring.
Yes, they're in the 35 bracket, but at 400,000, they're at the 35. $1 more, they're at the 39.6 under the new proposal. $401,000 puts them at 39.6, whereas $401,000 under the old rules, they'd be in the 35.
Correct.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's a big jump again, a big contraction of those tax brackets. I personally think this has a very good chance of passing. Why is all this important if you're sitting there and you're only earning $100,000 or $80,000 or $180,000? Or you could be that mechanic who wrote to us, he was making $180,000. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, hey, I'm still a far way away from that. It's not going to affect me. Don't worry. Well, it could someday. You don't know. What if you inherit an IRA? Under the compressed 10-year payouts, you might have 1-2 years, maybe more, of very high income. Mm-hmm. Because you're being forced to take money out of an IRA. That's sucking more and more taxes out of you. It could definitely impact you that way. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. What if you have 1 year where you make some pretty good money and all of a sudden you are getting a big boost and you're thinking, hey, great, but now the government's taking $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more from you because of these rules. So it's important to see what they're doing and how they're doing it. I know taxes have to go up. We're in debt up to our eyeballs. Our job isn't to say these are good or bad. Remember we got lambasted once when we did a tax show because we didn't talk about all the good that taxes do? That's a personal opinion. People don't hire me to hear me talk about all the good taxes do. They hire me for one simple reason, or us, not just me. They hire our firm to help reduce as much as possible that they have to pay to the government because they feel their money can be better used helping their family in different ways or something like that. Mm-hmm. So please don't complain to us about not talking about all the good that taxes are going to do if we just raise them. If you really feel that taxes do a lot of good, I got news for you. The government tells you the minimum amount you have to pay them. They don't tell them the maximum. If you really think the government does a great job, send them more. They get nothing. You know, just send it to them. People hire us to help them reduce it. And income taxes are going up on the higher brackets, but understand these compression rates and understand what could happen if you inherit or your children someday inherit. All you Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers, where do they have most of their money, Chris?
Retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, etc.
Exactly. Most of you have all your assets because you are such diligent doobies, saving in all these pre-tax always taxable accounts, I call them. Why? When you take money out of them, it's always taxable. Unless you do a QCD, I do recognize that.
But then you don't get it. I mean,
you don't, yeah, you
that's
don't
the
get
trade-off.
It. You, this is a trade-off.
You lose
100%. We're not going to tax it, but right. You don't get it.
Right, exactly.
So do keep that in mind. All right, we beat that horse to death. Let's move on to the next one. All right, I don't know which one I want to talk about next. Want to do the, any preference on which part we do next?
No, I'm flexible.
All right, let's go to the one that I think is going to impact a lot. We'll get to that one first. The prohibition on conversions of after-tax dollars. This is something that everybody has to pay attention to. Go ahead, you can say something.
Well, I just wanted to set the stage for it just a little bit to so that people who may not be as familiar, maybe newer listeners or those who haven't paid a whole lot of attention to this in the past. But you can, for a variety of reasons and in a variety of ways, actually put money you've already paid taxes on into a traditional retirement account, 401k, IRA, etc. And you might say, well, wait a minute, I thought we put already taxed money into Roths. Well, sometimes there was actually Roths I haven't been around that long. Some people put this kind of money in before Roths existed, or they're barred from putting money in the Roths, or they just decided they didn't want to. You're allowed to put this after-tax money into it. And you might think, well, then it doesn't just behave like a Roth. No, there's one key difference. Inside the Roth, and this is what made the Roth so much better than the ability to put after-tax money into the traditional accounts that existed before Roths, is that in a traditional account, the money you put in after tax remains available to you ultimately without being taxed again, but the growth is all taxed when it comes out. Roth changed that whole story. When you've got it in the Roth, you put the money in, you've already paid taxes in it, that obviously can come out, but the growth, as long as you pull it out in a qualified manner, and there's a handful of rules that apply to that, the growth can come out tax-free as well. That's the difference. That's why people don't just leave their after-tax money in these traditional accounts unless they have to. Sometimes it's stuck there. They can't easily get it. But when they can, it makes sense to roll it out into the Roth so that any future growth is tax-free if taken out in a qualified manner. That I wanted everybody to understand before now they hear from Jim why what's going to change is going to be such a bummer.
Exactly. So why don't we first explain to listeners how after-tax money can get into an IRA in the first place? First, it could be purposefully put in there in a strategy. It is called the backdoor Roth, and a lot of people say the backdoor Roth conversion. We never liked to say that because there is no backdoor for a Roth conversion. Anyone can do a Roth conversion. Now, in this bill, which we'll talk about on a couple of future shows, I'm going to talk about it today, certain people will not be allowed to do Roth conversions. But up until the passage of this bill,
right now, anyone can do a Roth conversion.
Anyone can do a Roth conversion. So I didn't like saying backdoor Roth conversion. Anyone can do it. Not everyone can put money into a Roth as a contribution. Those are controlled by income. So a way around it was, as long as you didn't have an existing IRA, if you did, the pro rata rule hurt you. We won't get into that. We covered it ad nauseum on this show. But if you didn't have an existing IRA, you could put money in. Let's say you put $6,000 or $6,500 into a non-deductible IRA. Anyone can do that. Anyone can open up an IRA. Bill Gates can. Richest man in the world. Who is that? That Bezos dude. He can put money into a non-deductible IRA. Doesn't matter. And it would be non-deductible, so it's after-tax money. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't leave it in there because any growth would eventually be taxed.
Exactly. So they would then turn around and convert it into a Roth IRA. And because it's all after-tax money, there'd be no taxes owed.
They already paid the taxes. They don't have to pay it again.
So essentially, someone who was not allowed to put money into a Roth IRA started to put money into a Roth IRA. And when the Tax Cut and Job Act passed, there was a lot of consternation in our industry between advisors and CPAs on one side and advisors and CPAs on the other side. Some thought the strategy would never be allowed under the STEP doctrine provision and were telling people don't do it. And others, such as myself, were, nope, if they didn't want you to do it, they would have told us. Well, under the Tax Cuts and Job Act that came out under the previous administration, they pretty much graced it. They graced it in the actual language of the, I forget what they call it, but the rules.
Explaining everything.
Explaining
how it was supposed to work. They admitted that this strategy existed.
And they
had no problem with it.
No problem with it. Now, apparently, they have a problem with it. Because once they pass this rule that after-tax money cannot be converted, they're not saying you can't put it in a 401k or an IRA. No problem with that. Mm-hmm. As Chris said, they love that. Why? Because they know the growth will be taxable eventually. So go ahead and put it in. You just cannot put it in a Roth or convert it then into a Roth. Now, that's one way it can get in. Purposefully trying to get it into a Roth through a back door. But also throughout people's working career, there are people who don't want to do a back door. What they instead want to do is, or could only have done, they might be working for a company. They've got extra money, Chris. They've got nothing that they want to do with it. So they will put after-tax money into their 401k because a lot of companies allow that.
And they will have met the maximum amount that they can defer. Technically, there's a difference in limit in how you can put, how much you can put in these accounts. A lot of people hear the number you can defer and think that's the most. You can actually put in more than the deferral amount. The only difference is the extra that you put in, the excess contributions that you put in. I won't call them that. I take it back. Let's not call it excess contributions. That means something else. The amount above the deferral limit that you put in is after tax. You're not going to get to defer the taxes on it. But maybe you prefer it in there so that the growth that happens, any potential growth, is tax deferred. It won't be tax free, but it'll be tax deferred. That's how. And maybe you had no intention of ever converting it or doing the back door.
And you can put sometimes $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 more. We won't get too deep into the show on how you do it because we think it's going the way of the dodo bird. So there are people out there, we've met them, with hundreds of thousands of dollars of basis in retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not hundreds of thousands, there's someone we're working with right now who's got about $55,000. There's other clients of ours who have $10,000. You can have after-tax money in these accounts. You track it on a form called 8606. Y'all should know that. And it's in there. And you can keep track of it. We call it basis, but it's actually tax basis when it's inside an IRA. It's basis. And strategies existed. In 2015, Chris, the IRS came out with explicit instructions on how to separate cream from coffee in 401ks, cream being after-tax contributions you put in, coffee being all the pre-tax contributions and all the growth on your pre-tax contributions, your employer match, and the growth on any after-tax money. So that all that's subject to taxes. So they explained in 2015 how, if you follow certain instructions, or the 401k custodian followed certain instructions, the IRS would allow you easily to move the after-tax contributions in a 401k to a Roth IRA, and all the tax-deferred growth and deducted contributions to an IRA. And you could separate them. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this for years. Yep. You can just separate it. No more. All of a sudden, they're against it. All of a sudden, they're going after Roths. They're going after Roths in this. They're not, and no proposal was made to tax Roths. But there are several proposals in here, some that they're really trying to stick it to the uber rich. If you have retirement accounts worth more than $10 to $20 million, they're really coming after you. But this, Chris, to me is the writing on the wall or the canary in the coal mine of what I've been saying. We get so many people tell us they're not going to convert money to a Roth because they don't trust the government. And the government's going to turn around and tax them. Going to pull the wool under their eyes, pull the wool out from under them, rather, and start taxing the Roth IRAs. I never felt, Chris, that they were going to tax Roths. What did I always say? They'll close them.
They'll just shut it off so you can't put any more in.
Yeah. No more. To me, this is the writing on the wall that is coming. Not saying it's coming in this act. Nowhere even close. But I would not be surprised 8, 10, 12 years from now, Roths go the way of the dodo bird. And you're going to see that with another provision they built into this. It just kind of gets you to understand. I always said, Chris, it was going to dawn on them. Politicians are very short-term thinkers. They're like rats in more ways than you ever imagined. But you put in front of a little rat a piece of cheese, the rat will see that and he's going to want to go eat the cheese. He's a very short-term thinker because he's not looking at that big snap thing above his head that as he eats a little bit of that, it's going to snap down on him. They're just short-term thinkers, just like a politician. Politicians are dirty rats. I hate politicians, if you don't know, from both sides of the aisle. So before you all start writing to me, I'm a lefty, I'm a righty. I hate them all, folks. But anyways, what I'm
getting... That's a little strong.
This short-term thinking, and I always said, listeners, I do not worry about them taxing Roths. I worry about them closing them. Why? As Roths grow, I said, and I've been saying this for 20 years, as Roths grow, eventually it's going to dawn on them that there's a hell of a lot of money in these things that we can't tax. And this short-term sugar high we got by not letting people deduct their measly $3,000 or $6,000 or $5,000 contribution is going to come back and bite them in the hiney because they're going to realize there's trillions in Roths they'll never tax. It's dawning on them now, and you have one man to thank for this. Who is it, Chris?
Peter Thiel.
What did he do?
Well, he was the co-founder of PayPal at first, but since that story started, in the background, he somehow amassed $5 billion inside of a Roth IRA by manipulating the rules. You know, I haven't yet heard.
Now wait a minute. Wait, Wall Street Journal did a whole
exposé.
Journal did this. Mm-hmm. How he did it? Mm-hmm. He did it was perfectly legal.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He manipulated the when I he worked within the rules, but he did it in a way that was never intended.
I disagree again.
No, I don't.
He put his
I don't disagree with myself.
He put his money in legally and correctly, got it in, converted it in, got it all in. It's just that when it was in there, folks, he loaded up on shares of PayPal at tenths of a cent each.
That weren't publicly traded, right?
Yeah, just filled it all up. They're coming after that, too, as you'll see in a minute.
Yep.
So he did it perfectly legally.
Yeah, I didn't say
he
it was
just
illegal.
Screwed it for everyone. He is that guy in class when we were in grammar school who made us all have to stay after.
Mm-hmm.
It's that SOB. So that story has just enraged politicians. But it all comes back, folks, to what I've always been saying. It's eventually going to dawn. None of the politicians voting for this, except for Nancy Pelosi, because she's been around longer than dirt. None of the politicians voting for this were probably around when Alan Roth, what was his name? I think it was Alan Roth. From Delaware.
Yeah.
He was a senator from Delaware, not the one who's in the White House now. Might have been Alan Roth. I don't know. He's passed away. Google the Roth who found
it.
Roth IRAs are named after a Delaware senator who created them. They came out in 97. I think he proposed them in the early 90s. But anyways, I don't even know if any of the politicians in office now who are voting on this change were even around back then and voted. Well, Biden would have been. Bill Roth. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I always said it's eventually going to dawn on politicians that Roths are too good to be true. This is telling me when you see some of these provisions they're passing, I will not be surprised. 8, 10, 12 years, they are going to close Roths. They're not going to force you out of them. They're just going to say you're grandfathered in, no more money going in.
Right. And the way they'll automatically close, as most people would know, is you'll be able to keep them throughout your life, but any leftover then is going to be forced out by whoever inherits it. So there will be a fuse lit on these things. And I agree. I think it'll eventually be to the point where they'll shut off more contributions and conversions into them. Whatever you've got, you've got. But once that's gone, you're done.
Exactly. Because they're starting to realize when they see Peter Thiel has $5 billion that they can't get one red cent from, whoa. So now they're going after everyone. And one of the things is they're saying they're trying to keep more money from going into a Roth. So they're saying, hey, the thing we're going to turn off is after-tax money. You can't convert after-tax money. You have to only convert money that you haven't paid taxes on. It's a meaningless rule. If you put money in a IRA after tax, you've already paid taxes on it. And then you move it into a Roth. It's the same thing as contributing it. It's still after tax.
Yeah, but some people can do one and not the other.
Correct.
So they're shutting off the back door.
Right. It's punitive. But it's punitive against a lot of people who were doing a strategy to get some more money in a Roth. They were following the rules. Roth IRAs are getting too big. I always said this, and now they're going after them. And mark my words, folks, you will not be able to put money in a Roth in the not too distant, 8, 10, 12 years, I think. Okay, so back to how this is going to impact all of you. If you are eligible for a back door, you could do it up till April 15th of the following year. What I don't know, because next year, if you put money into a non-deductible IRA and call it a 2021 contribution, would that still float under the 2021 rules? I don't think so.
Yeah, we don't know yet for sure. But
so to be safe, if anyone used to do their backdoor Roths, and we have a few clients who do it that way, they would always do it in February, March, or April after they do their taxes, try to figure out what their situation is like, and then put the backdoor money in. So for 2021, they're putting it in 2022. My gut tells me, because the law says January 1st of 2022, after-tax money can no longer be converted. I don't think it's going to have a window of, oh, you're putting this in for a 2021 contribution. Okay, we'll let you do it. I don't think so. So if you used to do that strategy, don't risk it. Do it now. If you have basis in an IRA or a 401k, that is after-tax money, that's cream. Everything else in that IRA and 401k is coffee. Chris, what generally happens if you took one of those mini moves, opened it, put it into a cup of coffee and stirred it? What generally happens?
It mixes together very nicely.
And you can't really separate it, right?
Not easily.
But there is one way, and you've got 3 months left to do this. If you have cream mixed with your coffee, if you have after-tax money in your IRA or your 401ks, you might have a chance to separate it. Many of you won't. Many of you are SOL, and there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. You might have been putting all this money in, especially on the mega. The thing with the mega conversion strategy, a lot of people put it in, but their employer never allowed them to remove it. So the strategy was, they were going to do it later when they retired, which the IRS blessed in 2015. Those people are screwed. Unless they quit. Quit. Move.
Get rehired.
Seriously. Quit so you can move the damn 401k and then get rehired. Now, please don't say some guy in a podcast told me to go quit. But
think it through.
I guarantee you someone's going to do that. Hey, boss, wink, wink.
Well, somebody who's close or go on some kind of transitional where they separate from service for
or has hundreds of thousands of dollars in their 401k, which we've seen.
Well, always remember that that money that's in there that's amassed is never going to be taxed. It's been taxed once.
But
they're not
going to
double tax. But if they're not doing it until retirement, they're, you know, that's what they're losing out on is potential future growth. It's so make sure we keep this in perspective what we're talking. We're not talking the amount that's already in there.
But we have a lot of clients where we do guaranteed
conversion.
Estate planning. We have clients who want to try to maximize from a tax perspective the inheritance to their children.
There's all kinds of reason to keep that Roth long term.
Exactly. And one of the strategies we do is, as you all know, second to die guarantee universal life policies, which even if grantor islets go the way of the dodo bird, I still feel they're going to come up with another trust that'll take care of it. But even if they couldn't, second to die guarantee universal life policies, especially with all these tax changes, is still great because it's income tax free and may be estate tax free depending on what they do with that. They didn't cut the limits nearly as low as we're going to get to that too on next week's show. But back to what I'm getting at, we do have a lot of people who even in their 60s, will earmark hundreds of thousands of dollars to a Roth and tell us, especially if we're managing their assets, this is for my children or my grandchildren when I die. And they still hope to live 30 years or 20 years. And then the grandchild, the child can still keep that Roth for another 10. So there could be 30, 40 years of growth potential on a few hundred thousand dollars. Do you think I'm putting that in a moderate portfolio of 60-40? If this has a 40-year hold, I'm stoking that thing with some aggressive equities. That's where this strategy works, and it's closing. But if you have money in an, let's talk the IRA strategy first, Chris. So let's just say we've got some listeners who have their job and quitting and getting rehired isn't high on their totem pole. And they have an IRA, Chris. And let's just use some round numbers. So, and you all listeners have to decide if you have 7,000 in it or 70,000 or 200,000 of after-tax basis. What is worth it for you to do all this paperwork? But let's just assume, Chris, to keep numbers round, we've got a person with $100,000 in an IRA, $20,000 is after-tax, $80,000 is pre-tax, $100,000 total. And they're working, and they have a good job. They like the 401k that they have. The investments are okay. They may not be Vanguardian-level investments, but they're not against them. And their employer does allow rollovers, transfers rather, well, technically it would be a rollover, into the 401k.
I usually call those roll-ins.
Roll-ins. That's a good one, a roll-in. They have an option. Why don't you explain to our listeners what their option is.
Well, their main option here, assuming a roll-in, so rolling another retirement account, Jim described an IRA, into an employer-sponsored account. A lot of them allow that, but there's a rule. Those accounts cannot accept roll-ins of after-tax money. So you can see what's happening here. You try to roll that IRA in, and they hold up their hands and say, fine, we'll take the $80,000, the before tax, we're allowed to take that, but the $20,000 has to stay behind. They just basically gave you a special filter that only allows in the before-tax money, but the after-tax stays behind. So the reason why we're pointing this out is if you tried to convert this now or distribute out from this account, this IRA in its current form, you're going to be subject to the pro rata rule. The dollars are going to flow out 80-20 before tax and after tax. What you really want is that after tax alone to move over to the Roth so that any future growth is tax-free. You need to filter. You need to separate that cream from coffee somehow. And this is the classic technique for those who are working and have an employer-sponsored plan who allows roll-ins. This is something worth considering. There's a few things to worry about. You can't roll it back out if that was your intention until the following tax year, till after December 31st. But you just got to make sure you do it right. But you can very effectively separate the cream and coffee in this way. And if you do that now, before the end of the year, you can get that converted before this door shuts on these after-tax conversions into Roth.
Exactly. Remember, your after-tax basis never changes. It stays static, even if the markets fluctuate. So don't worry about any of that. People say, how do I actually separate it? I don't know on the day I transfer all the assets, how much is basis. It doesn't matter. As long as you kept track on 8606 and you know what your basis is, in my example, $20,000, it doesn't matter on the day you transfer it to the 401k. I said there was $100,000 total, $80,000 of growth. Doesn't matter if that $80,000 of growth grew to $93,000 or dropped to $62,000. When the transfer into the 401k is done, there'll always be $20,000 left. Why? When you fill in your transfer form, you are specifically told you cannot transfer pre-tax money, and you have to write down what to transfer in or what to leave behind, rather. You're just going to put $20,000. That's not going to move. One of the easiest ways to do it is put all the money that's going to go into the 401k in cash, if you will, and put the $20,000 that's static in something that's not going to move.
Something that the 401k won't allow to come in.
Correct. That the 401k won't allow to transfer in, or we've had clients do it this way. You could take the $100,000 of basis, believe it or not, and move it to a separate IRA. Leave the $20,000 of basis there, and then move the other IRA. As long as there's $20,000 of basis. And you have to move all your IRAs. We didn't tell them that. Right. If you have one IRA, like I described, $20,000 after-tax basis, $80,000 of growth, and another IRA with $200,000 of all pre-tax money, all the IRAs have to move.
Think of it as one big one. That's the way the IRS looks at it.
Exactly. So the best way to separate the basis to make sure that $20,000 is there is you move it to a separate IRA, and it's just there. There's $20,000 there. You leave it sitting there in cash. There's $20,000 there. Everything else you're going to have to liquidate anyways because only cash can move into the 401k, not an asset. So all the other accounts, or you can have one IRA with $100,000 in cash, but you tell them, move just $80,000. There's many, many ways of doing this. It's not difficult, but you just got to remember your basis never fluctuates. And by law, it cannot move to the 401k. Now, Chris also did mention you cannot move it back. So people got burned on this. They don't like the 401k. They don't want to stay there, especially you Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers. You're going to be, oh my goodness, the fees are so much higher. And they probably are higher than what you're paying at Vanguard. And you're thinking, I'm going, so like it's June, I'm going to do this, and by July it's done, Chris, and they move the money back out of the 401k to an IRA. Doesn't work. Okay. You have to wait till the following year to move the money back, or the pro rata rule will still apply. You only got 3 months of this year left, practically. So you've got time to get this done. Don't wait till December, folks. It'll never happen. You know how many people are going to be doing this?
Yeah.
So custodians will most likely put the kibosh on this early because they're going to be inundated.
Yep.
So don't sit on your hineys waiting. I really feel this is going to be in it. If it's not, it's not. Great. But you can't wait. What if they don't get this signed till December sometime? Custodians normally put the kibosh on anything December 15th in a typical year. Could you imagine a year where this is going on? Mm-hmm. They may say, hey, after December 1st, we can't guarantee anything's going to get done.
Right.
And even though you can do it, you're not going to get the custodian to start making these transfers. Now, if you have a 401k and you're no longer working for that employer and there is after-tax money in there, I know a lot of you, a lot of our clients have that situation. Now, I don't know how many have basis. We're going to be contacting our clients in the not too distant future. But if you have basis in an old 401k, you might be very happy there and you might be thinking, well, I'll separate it later. Now's your last chance. The government, the IRS blessed moving money from a 401k to an IRA and separating out basis. Mm-hmm.
With the basis going over to the Roth. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to explain to you how it's done because it doesn't matter. You're just going to tell the 401k provider, this is what I want to do. And they will set it up for you and do it. And as the money comes out, they will automatically send the basis to the Roth, the non-basis to an IRA. You have to close the 401k. Sorry. If you want to get all the bases out, the pro rata rule still applies. The best way to describe it, same scenario, Chris, $100,000 in a 401k, 80 of growth, 20 of basis. You cannot call the 401k and say, hey, I heard this guy on a podcast saying that in 2015, the IRS blessed separating the basis from a 401k. Can you get the $20,000 to move it to a Roth, please? But I want to leave the 80 in the 401k. The big fat answer to that, Chris, is your little ant sign, right? Can't do that.
Correct.
The IRS said all distributions from a 401k are subject to the pro rata rule.
Right.
All. However, when that money is first taken out of the 401k, just see it coming out and floating, folks, above the 401k. And then it's supposed to go back down to an IRA. The moment it's floating, you can separate cream from coffee. And that's where the custodian does it. They remove it. Let's say you're only going to move $20,000 in my example, Chris. So $20,000 is out and is floating. And the person thinks, wow, I want all 20 to go to a Roth. That's not going to happen, is it?
No.
The pro rata amounts of that. So what is the pro rata amount on $20,000? In our example, where 20% of the 401k is basis.
It's going to be $4,000.
$4,000. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that $20,000 is there, and then magically the custodian separates it and will send $4,000 to the Roth and $16,000 to the IRA, not all $20,000 to your Roth. The only way to get all $20,000 to your Roth, you got to close the entire 401k. The money, that $100,000, is kind of floating. Then the custodian works their magic. You don't have to know how they do it and what they do. Don't worry about it. They've been doing this since October 2015 when the IRS blessed it. The problem is this is going away most likely January 1st of 2022. It's not in the final bill. But I think this is really, I think they're going after Peter Thiel and they're going after Roths and they don't want more money in them. I think this is going to pass. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's likely to be headed that way. So it's just, again, too good to be true in a lot of people's eyes and Peter, not that we're on first name basis, has opened a lot of eyes that were kind of ignoring this or weren't paying that much of attention, and they just feel like it's now's the time to start doing something about it. So that'll have to wrap it up for today.
Okay. We're going to be doing a few more podcasts on this, folks. There's a lot more. I want to get into the grantor trusts and the issues we're going to have with islets. I want to get in on that 3% surtax only on taxpayers paying more than $5 million and how many of you listed paying more than $5 million, having income in any given year of more than $5 million may end up impacting maybe not you, but your family. And we'll get into that. And you might be saying, Jim, there's no way my family's ever going to be making $5 million in a year. We're never going to have to pay 39.6 plus an additional 3 percentage points on top of that. Yes, you will. Do you know that this what they put in there yet? Or am I, are you floating in the dust too? Or do you understand what I'm getting at?
I'm floating in the dust too, whatever that means.
Floating in the dust. It means you don't know what's going on. It's dust all around you. You can't see straight. I don't know. Don't tell me that's not a saying.
I've never heard that one.
Well, I just made it that's according to me, Chris is floating in the dust. Mm-hmm. It means he's not quite sure what I'm talking about.
I'm trying to pull the wool out from under my eyes.
What are you talking about? That's a...
It's okay.
Pull the wool out. Is this...
No, pull the rug out from under you is one saying. Pull the wool... Over
what did I
your,
say?
Pull the wool over your eyes is another saying, and you pulled the wool out from under people's eyes. It's all good.
Did I honestly? Well, yeah.
People noticed.
If you listen to this for a while, you know I...
Everyone knew exactly what you were talking about, though.
It's not what I say. It's what I mean.
Yeah, no.
You've said this many
times. It made perfect
times.
Sense in context.
Excellent. There was another thing I said not too long ago, and some guy emailed me, got a chuckle out of it, and I have no idea. I can't remember what it was. He just wrote, it was very kind. He wrote to me, and he says, "Really, Jim?" And he repeated what it was. And then I wrote back to him. I says, "Well, if you listen to my podcast, it's not what I say, it's what I mean."
Right.
But anyways, folks, apparently I do mess up Jimisms.
No, it made sense. Kind of. And the floating in the dust, I can see where you could that would work. I've just never heard it before.
Maybe I meant floating in the wind. That's the saying, right? Floating in the wind?
Yeah, I've heard that.
And your head is full of dust. I don't know. Whatever.
Sure.
What I'm getting at, do you understand that 3% surtax and how it might impact a lot of
listeners' kids?
Families? Yeah.
I haven't looked into that one, no.
Okay.
Nope.
I will share that with you folks on another podcast. But I envision us doing about two more of these on EDU shows. But I'm just trying to get you all to understand, seriously, I really feel this backdoor is done. So do some planning if you have basis in your IRAs. If you don't know what's going on, you do it yourselfers. Talk to some advisors. Chris and I are very busy. I can't promise you at all we'd ever be able to help anybody. But talk to some advisors. Talk to your CPA. Talk to us. I can't say for certain we'll be able to help you. But start getting this separated because the clock is ticking. If you have a lot of after-tax basis in a 401k, you're not going to be able to move that entire 401k until you separate from service. And
most likely.
Most likely.
There are employers that allow after-tax money to flow out on a regular basis.
Correct.
So check. You need,
check
you need to ask just in case.
Absolutely. Get a hold of the HR department or the 401k people. Hey, is there any way I can get this out now? Some will at age 59 and a half. Some will at 62 or 65 allow far more access to your 401k. I'm not saying the other option is quit and get rehired, but if you have it in a 401k, you do have time to separate it, but only if your employer allows it or only if you quit. So you might not be as flexible as having the IRA and moving it in. And for those of you with a very large IRA, let's say we helped a few people, but there's one in particular who moved almost $1 million into a 401k to separate less than $100,000 a basis. And then they quit a few months later and took it all back out because they knew that was coming, but they wanted to separate the basis out and get it into a Roth. Do keep in mind, if you transfer money into the 401k, and you may be against that, you might have a $1 million IRA with $35,000 a basis. and you're thinking, gosh, I'd love to get that 35 into a Roth, but I don't want to put $1 million into my 401k. Check with the 401k and see if they allow unfettered access to money that is transferred in. I serve on a retirement board. I won't say the employer, and it's not going to be for much long. I'm resigning this year. But I volunteer my time, Chris, on a retirement board. They allow transfers in and unfettered access to that money. So it's near the end of the year, Chris. You see where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. You could, in my example, you got $1 million IRA, $35,000 a basis. You're working for the company. You may not be in love with the 401k, but they're going to allow you to transfer it in, and they mm-hmm. confirm with you, you have unfettered access to just that money, and you'll be allowed to move it back out.
In January.
Mm-hmm. I would not wait till December.
No, to try the in.
I would get it in now, and even if it doesn't pass in the bill, just move it back out in
You still accomplished what you were probably eventually going to do. Right. You maybe were just trying to avoid the paperwork to do it. Now there's a reason to consider doing the paperwork.
So all is not lost if you have that 401k. If you're thinking of quitting or close, well, no, that wouldn't work. I won't go there. But do keep in mind, folks, if you've already left, you will probably not be allowed to move an IRA into the 401k. A lot of 401ks don't allow that. Some do. So check. If you're still working there, most will allow you to transfer an IRA in. If you quit, find out if they allow you to put it in. And then wait till next year, take it back out. But in the meantime, separate that cream from the coffee.
Perfect. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening again. We'll have more about these potential tax planning threats and opportunities next time on the EDU show. In between, we'll have a Q&A show. So if you want more information about what we do or wants to send us a comment or question, go to jimhelps.com. That's jimhelps.com. Till next week, take care.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.